Well, hello everyone. This is Daniel here from the Solar Network. And today we're gonna be talking about a very unique church model. And I have with me Michael Lee and David Lee, no relation, but we actually just found out that they went to the same high school. But before we talk with them, I wanna share a bit about like how we got here. Why are we having this conversation? So, I'm gonna share with you the way that a lot of Asian American churches start, especially started by immigrants. Let me get this going. This is what we call, can everybody see this? This is what we call the room for rent model. And a lot of times immigrants come and they start a Bible study or a church. And they realize that, oh, we need to have something for it that's English speaking. Maybe it's a children's ministry, maybe it's a youth ministry. And they say, okay, we have a room where they can have, they can worship and meet, and they can, the primary language is English. So whether, and this is actually true for many different immigrant church models. It's not just Asians, it could be Latino, it could be other immigrants as well. So a lot of times they start like this, and some of you are even in a church that's like this right now. This is the room for rent model. After a while, what happens is that the people who are English speaking and worship are more comfortable worshiping in English, they start deciding, hey, we need to have a worship service for the English speaking. And so that a lot of times moves to sometimes what we call the duplex model. And this is just an example. It says Chinese and English, but it also could be Korean or English. It could be Spanish and English and so on. But you have a duplex model. And what you're seeing is that you have two parallel congregations under the same roof, under the same leadership. And this is actually a lot of immigrant churches or bilingual churches, and so to speak. And for the Chinese churches, we have something that's kind of a related to this. It's called the triplex model, where we actually have Cantonese, Mandarin, and English, three different congregations worshiping under the same roof. And that roof represents leadership. That's talking about like a senior pastor and a board and sharing a budget. Does that make sense, everybody? So this is what's going on with the duplex and the triplex model. Along the way, whether it's EM and KM or Cantonese, Mandarin, English, a lot of times what happens is that there's a thought about whether or not the English ministry should plant their own church, And one of the things that they could decide to have two churches under one campus, but different leadership. And that is what some people call the townhouse model. Can everybody say this? This is KM and EM, two different churches. Notice the roof is different, right? Two different churches. And this could be Chinese ministry, English ministry, or something else. But this is just an example. We see KM and EM, where it's one campus, but two distinct independent churches with different leadership. And that's what we call townhouse. Now, this is rare. This doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's usually something that's very interesting to people who are in immigrant churches, and because they want to learn about it, because they think that it could be something that they could pursue. All right. Now, if you want to learn more about these Asian American church models, this is a great book. It's called Tapestry of Grace, and this is by Ben Shin and Cheryl Takagi Sulzer. And you can actually read about it in this book. All right. Today, we're going to be talking about the townhouse model. And I have two church leaders, two pastors who are in these models. And so I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves first and just tell a little bit about your church model. And then we're going to talk about, you know, how did it come to be and so on. So I'm going to start with Michael Lee. Just tell us a bit about your church model you are with All Nations Community Church. Tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Daniel. And my name is Michael Lee. I serve as the lead pastor at All Nations Community Church. I'm in my eighth year here. We partner with a large Korean church called ANC Onuri. So All Nations Onuri as well. And that church has, you know, about, you know, over 2,000 members, very large, and actually very healthy. One thing that really drew me to this church was that in its 25 plus years of ministry in existence, it had never experienced church splits. And they had previously stayed under one senior pastor. The current senior pastor was a good friend and mentor of mine, Reverend Tae Kim. He's only the second senior pastor in the history of the church. And so that's kind of something that first kind of attracted me to coming to All Nations, serving here. And yeah, we started off as an English ministry, very much that room for rent, financially dependent, not really giving back besides areas of service and volunteering for children's and youth ministry and whatnot. And over the years, yeah, God gave us a bigger vision, a more fuller and robust vision for interdependence. And so our church motto is one family, two churches with one great commission. And so that's kind of like the shared kind of narrative of why we are doing interdependence, what we're hoping for, what we're aiming for. And we stay together as a family unit of God. We're bound and just really kind of focused in on the gospel and the Great Commission. And at the same time, we understand that we need independent governance and leadership and things like that. And so it's been a really good journey, and I'm looking forward to sharing a little bit more of our story.
Great. Thank you, Pastor Michael. We're going to move to Pastor David Lee. He's with Ecclesia Atlanta Christian Fellowship. And so I'm going to leave it up to you to share more about your church as well as we move forward.
Yes, thank you, Daniel, for allowing me to participate in this conversation. So I am a Korean David Lee, not a Chinese David Lee, but growing up in Atlanta, went to Korean churches, went away for college, went away for seminary, came back, eventually made my way over to Ecclesia Atlanta, which is the English church, English-speaking congregation attached to the Atlanta Chinese Christian Church. And I've only been here for about 5 years. And so I'm kind of jumping in midstream with this narrative that's already been going on. But interestingly, my wife and I have a long history with this church as friends of the church because we had our wedding here 19 years ago. I knew the pastor at the time, and over the years have been invited to guest preach. And then when the pastor position was open, they asked me to help with preaching, and then invited me to take on the position of lead pastor. So coming as a Korean American, having worked primarily in Korean American contexts into the Chinese church, it's been interesting trying to trace the history of what's gone on here. Atlanta Chinese Christian Church was organized about 42 years ago. And as is typical with the narrative of a lot of our immigrant churches, primarily international students here in the Atlanta area at Emory and Georgia Tech that had their student fellowship groups and decided to settle in Atlanta, so they organized a church. The migration within the Atlanta community meant that this particular congregation ended up planting two daughter churches in the further suburbs where the school systems were considered stronger. So as families continued to settle in the Atlanta area, they decided that they wanted to strategically target those areas and send out people. But when the English congregation was also interested in having a church plant, that actually was not supported fully by the Chinese congregation. They decided instead of doing that, there are a few other things that happened in the course of that. Over the years, you know, some of the members who were part of the English congregation have gone to other churches. Atlanta and Dallas take turns holding the title of the metropolitan area with the most number of mega churches. So there are lots of options here in Atlanta for Asian Americans to go to. So there has been a slow exodus of people who felt like their needs weren't being met within this, or the model of the room for rent. So when it came time to figure out, well, what can be done if a full church plant wasn't going to actually happen, is they decided to pursue this dual church model or the townhome model, which has been in place for about 8 or 9 years now. And it's, again, I come in for just the last half of that time. But it's been interesting trying to plug in and be part of the conversation in the present and going into the future.
So my opening question for you guys is, and you may have been there when it did, when you started this model, or you may have not been, but what were the reasons why your church or the at least the mother church decided to do this? And my follow-up question will be, what was the process to get there? So either one of you can start. So why and how?
Well, I'll just continue with what I was saying. So when the Chinese congregation at my church, the Atlanta Chinese Christian Church, planted the two other churches, those churches have actually still been under different models. So they have English congregations. One of them is actually the largest of the three churches now, and the other is the smallest of the three. So the one that's the largest is still in the duplex model. So in their organizational chart, they have a senior pastor, then they have two assistant or associate pastors, one for each congregation, Mandarin and English, and then the other ministries as well. The third church is still pretty much the room for rent model. So ours is the only one that developed this townhome model or this dual church model. And again, with the history of, you know, what had happened with the church plant being sent out, not being supported, understanding that there were some needs that were leading to that initiative, but then finding that it wasn't fully supported, so they needed to do something different. The guy who was the pastor for the English congregation at that time and the leadership of the English congregation still felt this need to have some sense of autonomy and independence. And so I think this proposal is what came up. And I was told by one of the former members that, you know, that it took a while to have all these conversations about what that was going to look like. Daniel, like you said, this is not something that is common to see. And so they drafted a document called the Dual Church Covenant. Both sides reviewed it and they decided to adopt that as their guiding principles for how to do this, this dual church relationship. So in that construction, what they did was they took children's ministry and they put it under the auspices and the administration of the Chinese ministry. Mm. And they took youth ministry and they slotted that under the English congregation.
So it's not shared in terms of leadership?
To a certain extent, it's supposed to be according to the stipulations of the church covenant. And I'll talk about the follow through or lack of follow through on that in a little bit. But the idea was to still have a collaborative relationship. And the language within that dual church covenant is actually kind of neat because they talk about ownership, this sense of ownership that's meant to be shared by both congregations over those ministries. Although the administration is somewhat resides with one of the congregations in principle. So the opportunities for there still to be interdependence is there. And I actually appreciate when I was in seminary in St. Louis, I went to Covenant Seminary, my senior pastor at the Korean Presbyterian Church there, John Su, used to say that there's really three stages that we're supposed to experience. The first is dependence, the second is independence, and the third is interdependence. I think a lot of times we end up idealizing and idolizing independence, which when you compare what an English congregation looks like with just the life stage that they're in, right? If we're talking about people who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, we're in the mindset of independence. You know, it's not until we get to our 50s and 60s and our parents start to need us again that we realize, oh, we're actually supposed to be interdependent. So that third stage is really what we're supposed to be looking at. And it's scriptural, right? It's biblical. Yep, we see that with the way that the churches relate to one another after Paul goes on his missionary journeys. But sometimes we don't see that because we're still in the mindset of independence, independence, independence. And I think that still bears out sometimes in the way that our members are navigating this. So I appreciate that dual church covenant and some of the language that's written in there that fosters this sense of this fuller relationship that we're meant to continue to share and appreciate. It's a question of how well are we following through and how well are we continuing to cast that vision. So,
okay. So again, let's recap. You were saying that administratively, the children's ministry is under Chinese, Mandarin, and then the youth ministry is under under the English ministry, English right. church, the church. What about the building?
So that is largely taken care of by the Chinese congregation.
Okay.
And we pay a portion based on average attendance, and that's calculated every 3 years.
Okay. So they do it proportionally. Okay. Interesting.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks, David. And thank you for the insightful word about interdependence. I appreciated that. Michael, can you tell us about how why did your church do this, and what was the process to get there?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, David, that was so good. Such a great story, and really encouraged by your model and your church. For us, why? It was because we asked. I think that was one of the things. But when I first came in 2014, I came in as the executive pastor under the English ministry pastor, who was Tae Kim, and then he became the KM senior pastor. So he's a rare breed, a true 1.5 bilingual. He was kind of serving as the executive pastor, overseeing English ministry, doing a lot of Korean church stuff. And then, when the founding pastor transitioned out, he became the KM senior pastor. And then in 2017, I received the call then to become the lead pastor of the English ministry. And by God's grace, over those 3 years, God really allowed us to grow in healthy ways, in our church size, our budget, our ministry development, staffing, things like that. And so, when we started to really think about membership, when we started to think about leadership and office with deacons and elders. And so it wasn't just a financial decision. I think a lot of times English ministries, they want independence because they want to be able to make their own financial decisions. That actually wasn't the driving issue for us. For us, we were really trying to ask ourselves, what does it mean to be a church, to lead and be part of a church? And we just ran into these just kind of like troublesome issues, like, where does membership really reside? Can you just be a member of a department, the English ministry department, or are we really called to be members of a fully organized body of Christ? And so when the Korean church was, having votes and elections and things like that for their officers, none of our members were participating in that polity. Mm-hmm. And if we were to ordain any deacons and elders, under what church? Is it under the Korean church? Does that mean that their members are voting on our officers when they have no knowledge and experience of them? And so we kind of came to this realization that not just because we were growing, and this was very important in the language that we used with our church and with the Korean church, we didn't want independence because we were growing numerically. We wanted them to understand that we were maturing. Yeah, we were maturing. And this was always... and I think this actually benefits the Asian American kind of family unit mentality to really say, hey, we are a family together. And I would ask the elders and the leaders of the Korean church, what's your vision for your children? Do you want them to just be living in your room, under your household, dependent on you the whole time? Or do you actually have a bigger vision for them to flourish as young adults, adults who get married, have their own kids, purchase their own homes and whatnot? And so I really kind of pressed into that image, that very familiar image of a family and maturing as we were communicating interdependence. And so that was the why. And the how, it was about a 3 to 4 year journey. It was a 3 to 4 year journey and a lot of communication, a lot of submission. And so I know that there were members and leaders in our congregation that wanted to particularize, which is kind of like the formal word for becoming independent. Mm-hmm. They wanted to push that faster. They're like, what's taking so long? But, for me and our council, we realized that this is going to be a slow process. And so it started with a joint task force of some of our leaders. We only had deacons at that time. So some of our senior deacons and KM elders, along with me and the senior pastor, we created a kind of interdependent task force where we would just start to talk and come to the table to cast vision, to communicate and whatnot. And so that happened in 2018. Then when we felt like the conversation was gaining enough momentum, 2019, our council made a formal proposal for interdependence. We submitted that to their council for review. They gave some back and forth feedback. Ultimately, they blessed it. And so we kind of approved it on our end. We asked them to review and approve. They did that as well. And then it was to take it to our congregations. And so we both presented to our respective congregations. And we actually made sure that the KM blessed first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we didn't want our congregation to vote on something and then possibly have it be turned down by the mother church. And so we actually asked them to review and bless first before we took action as well. And so, you know, I think that was just kind of an important posture and a rhythm that we took on. Very similar to David's church, we did establish a covenant. The legal term is memorandum of understanding. But, you know, that was just a little formal, you know, for our mother church leaders. And so they said, hey, do we need to have like contract language? And we said like, yes and no. And so it feels like a covenant is a good way to describe it. And so in that, it does talk about our respective responsibilities, our commitment to one another. Yeah, we don't own property on this campus, but we do pay rent. Mm-hmm. And so our commitment is no less than 10% of our annual budget. Our goal is to exceed that. But yeah, so that's something we adjust every year. And then, you know, knowing that we're in LA, I always joke, we get it on the cheap. You know, facilities are crazy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So if we're only doing 10% towards facilities, that's a steal for us. Yeah. And then we had to draft bylaws and all of that stuff. But the main work took place over the first like 2 years or so of just building that task force, bringing the leaders together, casting vision for it, and then submitting that to our respective councils, leaders, members, congregations, X, Y, and Z. And so that all in all was about a 3.5 year process.
Michael, you mentioned the building.
Yes.
What does it look like in terms of children's ministry and youth ministry?
Yeah. And so, I mean, one big thing for us is on our end with interdependence, you know, just if you read through the Psalms, especially Psalm 145, there's that command or that commission for one generation to declare the works of God unto another. Mm-hmm. And so I really do want our church members, second generation Korean American members to believe in blessing the younger generations and the older generations with the gospel of Christ. And so, you know, as far as like how that breaks down, we actually only take college and above. Yeah, so All Nations Community Church is a college and above ministry, even though we have so many families who have their children plugged into the children's and youth ministry as well. Okay. But as far as staffing and all of that, that's under the KM, and then we take college and up. And so, yeah, I know sometimes EM pastors, they want to oversee education. I've never desired that. And so, yeah, I just root them on. We support financially big events like DBS and whatnot, and then we bring manpower and everything we can to come alongside these education ministries.
So it sounds like then, if I'm putting two and two together, you have families where you have the parents who are attending your church, but their kids are at the Korean church for children's ministry. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
So there are two different churches, but together.
Yeah, that's actually, I mean, we're probably going to talk about, you know, where does it get sticky and uh-huh. tricky. That, especially for us, you know, we do hold to covenant theology. And so we've had some of our families ask, hey, where does, you know, to whom do these children belong and who are responsible for? And I definitely get that, you know, for those who are strong, strongly committed to, you know, covenant theology, you know, education models, that does get a little troublesome and tricky, a little muddy in that sense. But our thing is, you know, we just kind of defer back to the one family model. And we just say that these children are all of our children and we want to raise them up in the Lord. We want to serve them. It's a a KM teacher who speaks English or an EM teacher who's serving in that ministry, we're all doing this together, you know, to make disciples of our children. And vast majority of our families are okay with that. Yeah, they appreciate that. But there's a little bit of code switching going on.
Yeah, sure. So it sounds like some of your members are actually serving at the other church then.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well, brothers, I want to ask you, like, so we're gonna talk about, I want to talk about, you know, some of the wins, some of the challenges and all those things. So let's start with some of the benefits you see from this model. You know, what are some of the blessings? And you don't have to take turns. We can just have a nice conversation. Then we'll talk about the challenges. And then I want to kind of talk about, you know, if you were to encourage somebody who's thinking about this, what would you do? So let's go with first the blessings. Tell us about the blessings.
I mean, for one, you know, facilities is huge. Just having this campus, having space, and not having to, you know, especially during COVID, we had so many of my friends are, you know, doing mobile church, renting at schools and auditoriums and whatnot. And so when everything was shut down, it was really trying for them. But for us to have facilities where we can go in and record and still do things, that was a huge advantage. And so we're really grateful. We're really grateful for the space, the hospitality and the support that the KM affords us. I think the second is, I think just resources, shared resources between two churches. And, you know, I think we're better together in that sense. So I know that with youth and children's serving, there's some subtle, there's some different cultures and some different dynamics at play. But nonetheless, you know, I do think overall, we're a better, more robust, healthy church together than we are apart. And that's actually been one of the areas where our church has grown the most. Our growth hasn't been just from retaining graduating high school seniors. Actually, we're really not in a good college town in the North LA area. But the majority of our growth has come from families who are looking for a place where they can grow and their children can grow. And to be part of a youth group or a children's ministry that, you know, will offer some of the Christian education, discipleship and programming opportunities that, you know, together we can afford our families and members. And so, yeah, I think those are big things. And then just to chuckle and joke, whenever you're in this model and something goes awry, you can just blame the other church as a like little scapegoat. And everyone's like, oh yeah. Be like, hey, we can't do that right now because, you know, Korean church has these things going on. And everyone's like, okay. And so a little bit of a light scapegoat, but don't use it too much because then you'll build up angst. Yeah.
Well, and you have to realize that they may be doing the same thing in the opposite direction as well.
Obviously. So I'll take that. I'll take it.
You know? Yeah.
Just like a house. Just like
Yeah. And I will, you know, and it's funny because there are times when I feel like the development of an English speaking congregation within the Asian immigrant church is like how individuals develop, you know? So we go through adolescence, we go through our young adult years. And sometimes in those stages, we don't appreciate the roof over our heads very easily. You know, we don't appreciate some of the benefits that we get that are just kind of, they just happen. You know, we don't really acknowledge them. So the fact that, you know, the facility is here for us and most of the maintenance we don't have to think about. We do contribute to financially, but we don't actually have to think about. And that's something that, you know, we do want to honor and we do want to be thankful for and generate, you know, foster that appreciation for, you know, where you are, Michael, in the LA area. Yeah, I can understand how the rents would make you really appreciate that. But I do think just in the development of us and our maturity, that's something that we have to be cognizant of. And it's funny because the ways that comes out may be different. Like the Chinese congregation, the first generation will take care of the facility differently than we might, you know, because they want to do a lot of stuff by themselves. They don't want to hire out, you know, certain tasks. But there's a certain sense where we just have to understand that and appreciate that. So to see like all the elderly people of our Chinese speaking congregation coming out to pull weeds in the parking lot It's a beautiful expression of faith. You know, it's not the way we might do it, but it's a beautiful expression of faith. And that leads me to the second thing that I think is really advantageous to us is having a multi-generational church. You know, when you, like our English congregation, our oldest people now is, you know, they're late 40s, early 50s, mid 50s, you know. And we don't have the benefit in our English congregation at this point of people in their 70s and 80s. So when we see the example of faith by the saints who established this church, that is something that we should appreciate and should learn from. And then the third thing is when I still hear their heart for the community and their mission for their church is they still have a heart to evangelize the Atlanta Chinese community. And, you know, that's really beautiful to see because it is actually a sacrificial mission that they're engaged in. You know, this may not have a great return for them personally, but they understand that for the kingdom, that is something that they're committed to doing. And, you know, those are the things that we want to celebrate. We want to support, even just as interdependent churches. If we weren't sharing a facility, we would want to support that, right? And so the fact that they're right next door to us, that we're sharing the same spaces, that means that there is a richness of faith there that we want to highlight and we want to appreciate, we want to learn from and grow from. And then just some of the practical things, like I do think that if we do have that posture, Michael used that word earlier, that posture of humility and teachability, that there is still, you know, much that we can learn from the older generation. So I think that where English congregations tend to not have that multi-generational dynamic, that still being connected to a first generation congregation allows us to experience some of that and to appreciate that. The last thing I'll say is that, you know, a lot of our growth, and it's slow growth, but we still have people coming in new to our church who are new to Atlanta, and what they search in that Google, you know, search bar is Atlanta Chinese Church, which means that they value something about this being a Chinese church. And even though I'm not Chinese, I can understand and appreciate that, that cultural heritage and that cultural tie and the contextualization to our own identity groups is important for some people, you know, to still retain. And God works within that. You know, there are other churches that meet other needs and that will help other people on that assimilation spectrum. But in this particular space, that there is something that God can uniquely do within this.
Are there any blessings that you've encountered that you didn't expect that you're...
Yeah, I'll share a funny one. Okay, so I have this sense, and a lot of us who've experienced Korean churches know that, you know, Korean churches do a good job of multiplying by dividing. And so, you know, in the Atlanta area, there's like one of the KM pastors told me there are over 400 Korean churches in the Atlanta area. Wow, that was actually a conversation I had about 15 years ago. So I don't know what the number is nowadays, but there are a ton and we don't need that many. You know, among the Chinese churches, I mean, there are a lot fewer, but the culture is different, you know, and in the Chinese culture, while there is a reluctance to confront issues, it's a very non-confrontational culture. The value of maintaining peace is a good value. You know, it is a good value pursuing peace as long as it's not a false peace or a peace that's constructed on ignoring the issues and not dealing with the ones that God wants us to deal with, you know? So, you know, that's something that I've come to appreciate, you know, that desire to maintain relationships, that desire to have peace in our relationships, to experience that, to be a blessing to the other person, to have a positive, you know, presence in our relationships with others. And that's a good thing, you know, and I think for some of us who have grown up in Korean churches where we've experienced some difficult circumstances and maybe have stories of battles that have gone on, that in some ways it's kind of refreshing, you know, to say that maybe there are times when the most important thing isn't winning the argument, but it is actually winning the relationship.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just kind of to dovetail off of that, probably the most important thing, the just surprise blessing for me is, just serving as a lead pastor in this interdependent model, Yeah, just learning how to lose as a lead pastor. And I think that that's a lesson we all have to learn, whether you're an independent department, whatever it might be. Just I found that a lot of us as leaders, we do struggle when we don't get our way. Yeah, when we don't get our way, when we put in a lot of thought, energy, prayer, you know, putting our best for this event or this direction or this vision or whatever it might be, and just not getting our way. I think a lot of pastors actually don't handle that well. Yeah. And there were definitely seasons where that created a lot of discontent and discord in my heart. But by God's grace, through this model and through the years, God has just taught me how to lose well and to know just very similarly that in doing so, you can gain relationships, you build trust. And that's a beautiful, you know, that's a beautiful thing. And that's worth way more than launching your one little thing, you know, that you think is going to, you know, revolutionize everything or whatnot. But yeah, so I think that was an unexpected blessing in my own formation and leadership. And then number two, I think it was just to see so many older families starting to come out to our church. And so I'm 40 years old. I'm not the oldest person in my church. We have four other elders, three of whom are in their mid-50s. And so I feel like I'm maybe at the 60th percentile of age in our church. And so it's been very humbling. And I constantly ask, like, why are you guys here? You know, isn't there a stigma? You know, wasn't there a stigma with our generation that, like, being part of the Korean church is kind of lame, and you know, the cool thing is to go to the majority culture church with better resources, facilities, program, preaching, music, or to go to the independent Asian American church where you don't have to worry about your parents and you can do whatever you want. But there are so many families who have actually come to our church from those contexts, and they've really enjoyed the interdependence. They've come to really appreciate and plug into our ministries. And so just that was an unexpected blessing, because you know, with the whole 20 years ago silent exodus, we just thought we were going to get worked, you know, everyone's going to leave. But lo and behold, I really think we're in a very special moment for Asian American ministries.
Love it. Okay, let's talk about some challenges, some areas of growth, think maybe some that you expected and some that you didn't expect.
I would say facilities are a blessing and facilities are a challenge. Yeah. And so literally there's a month in the year where it's reservation time for all of the rooms, and we have a system, and it feels like back when you were in college trying to register for classes. You know, it's competitive and it's crazy and whatnot. And so I definitely think for growing churches, for ambitious churches that want to do a good amount of ministry programming on Sundays and midweek. Just working out the facilities is really challenging as well. And I do want to just share like one little kind of note and personal thought I have. I don't think that, I do think the interdependent model with the two townhouses, it does work more smoothly when the campus actually has the space to kind of hold two churches and campuses. And so if your campus actually doesn't have, you know, multiple worship facilities and multiple rooms and fellowship areas to actually simultaneously accommodate two churches, it's really challenging. If the English speaking congregation gets slotted with that 2 p.m. worship slot main sanctuary, you're always going to feel, regardless of your financial independence and polity, you're always going to feel like you're getting the short end of the stick. And so not to discourage any pastors on a smaller campus, I just think that there's some built-in advantages if your campus actually has the facilities to make simultaneous worship gatherings and whatnot occur, so that you're not like giving up prime location and time.
So if you don't have adequate facilities, then it goes from being a townhome model to a timeshare model.
I like it. That's
whatever week you're assigned, it's like, well, I guess that's it, right? So I do think that that points to one of the other dangers or risks when it comes to developing. And I think a lot of us who have been leaders in these types of immigrant church spaces feel that there are times when if it defaults to standard operating procedure or just the way things have always been done, then that ends up prioritizing the first generation congregation or the larger congregation. So there are times, even you know, more recently when it comes to something with children's ministry and related to the families, that it orients naturally and you know, because of history, towards the Mandarin worship service. And then the needs of the children's ministry for the English worship service then become secondary or overlooked. So that's one thing. And you know, maybe Michael, because your senior pastor was the English ministry pastor in the past, then that can be very, very helpful because he is aware and can help make the Korean ministry leadership aware of those needs and will maybe be able to highlight those as necessary. But along with that is just continuing those conversations where we can help the leaders of the Chinese speaking congregation just to understand how the needs of the English congregation are different. You know, they haven't experienced the things that we've experienced. I mean, we haven't experienced the things that they've experienced, but the second generation, or now the second and third generation, because my kids are third generation, right? That what they're growing up with is just very, very different. And the first generation just doesn't have opportunities to experience that. So we have to continually have those conversations to expose them to those needs because they're not naturally going to become aware of them. And then along with that is the fact that it's still a Chinese church, you know, where Michael is, it's still a Korean church, especially if your kids and your youth are going to the ministries that are led by the Korean speaking congregation. Like for us, you know, when people put in that search bar on the internet, Atlanta Chinese Church, they're valuing it being a Chinese church, but that also means that for people who are not Chinese, it may be difficult to be in the space. So I've described it to our members that maybe our English congregation will always be a what I call a one-off church, where you fit the primary identity, which is, you know, Chinese American, or you're one degree removed from that and you have some sort of stake in that, whether your spouse is Chinese American or you lived in China or Taiwan, or you just, God's given you an affinity or a special interest in that group. But if you're, you know, I mean, many of our friends are not Asian at all. And if we invite them to our church, even though the service is in English, they may not fit, you know, and it may not be a good fit for them. They may not be comfortable with it. The children's ministry, if it's, you know, ministering to the needs of the immigrant families and the youth ministry as well, you know, if 80% of our youth are from immigrant first generation households, then their needs are going to take precedence. And oftentimes there's going to be some tension with the differences in culture and the differences in needs for the families within our English congregation. So we have to have that understanding of what we're dealing with for both congregations. And we have to continually have those conversations to make sure that we're building that understanding and awareness as we try to go forward. So that's one of the challenges that I would say.
Another challenge that we've seen is with education ministry, since, you know, our youth group and our children's ministry is under the Korean church, there have been discussions about curriculum, you know, and the programming, and where some of our families are not that happy with some of the content and curriculum there. And this is where I do believe, you know, theological unity is very helpful for both churches to share. And so for us, the KM is part of the CRC, Christian Reformed Church. We align with the CRC. We're in process to transfer in as well. And so in the CRC, there's three forms of unity, Canons of Dort, Belgic Confession, Heidelberg Catechism. And I think it's very important for our churches to share in our doctrinal distinctives together so that we can have a commitment to, teach and practice from the same theological tribe. Yeah. And so, I mean, I've heard stories of, you know, Southern Baptists working in Presbyterian churches and then causing a lot of, you know, theological friction in that sense. And so if you're leading in a ministry and you're willing to submit, you know, if you can't subscribe yet, but submit, I really think that that's an important part of interdependence, shared ministry. And so, yeah, just being in the same theological space, whether it's a denomination or an affiliation network, I think those are really helpful tiebreakers in that sense, where if there is division and there is contention, it's not just going to be who's more powerful, who's got more buy-in, who, you know, ownership or where it might be. It's you can both kind of refer to denominational polity and governance and kind of forms of unity there. And so I think, you know, that's been an area where, yeah, you know, we can kind of like work out some of the kinks, because we have had, you know, curriculum, education, tension in the past.
You know. Are the two churches on your campus denominational?
For All Nations?
Yeah.
We're a CRC.
Both churches.
So our English ministry is CRC aligned, and we're in process of joining the CRC. But all of our polity, everything that we do is reflective of CRC. I'm just not, I need to transfer my ordination.
Okay. All right. Pastor David, your denomination?
No, so it's non-denominational, and as is
both churches,
right? And as is typical in these types of situations, Congregationalist, Baptistic, but the added layer of it being Chinese, I think, complicates it in that a lot of times they don't talk about issues. You know? So anything that may be, you know, there may be, you know, theological diversity in the evangelical or Christian landscape, then it's possible for people to land in different places and still be here. And I've heard different stories of how that's actually happening as the theology continues to develop and evolve in Taiwan. So it's interesting the different influences that we see in the background of some of our members in both congregations. So it's funny because, you know, sometimes I tell my church members that, well, you hired a Korean guy, so I'm going to talk about things, you know. So we'll talk about different issues and, you know, just trying to start with scripture and then allow scripture to inform our beliefs. So it's, sometimes it can be challenging, but it also helps us to understand that within our Christian landscape, you know, unity in the essentials and liberty in the non-essentials.
I like it.
Grace to all, that we do need to continue to have that attitude when it comes to talking through these issues.
Yeah.
I'll say one of the other wrinkles to that is both our congregations have elders.
Mm-hmm.
Not every, you know, Congregationalist or Baptistic.
That's not very Baptist.
Right, church, it's Reformed, it can be Reformed Baptist, right? But the cultural understanding of what that means may be different, you know? So like in our Chinese congregation for a long time, the way that they would make decisions was they would have a joint board of elders and deacons together. But for a while, for a long while, every major vote had to be unanimous.
Wow.
Yeah, and that actually was a sticking point for a lot of things over the years. It was difficult. I mean, just within the Chinese congregation sometimes to, you know, just to move forward on some issues. And that actually created some difficulties between the two congregations before EACF became autonomous. Because there could be just one deacon in the Chinese congregation that may not have a lot of information, experience, or knowledge about some of the needs or some of the differences or just some of the situations, but would still be able to kind of scuttle the vote. But that was very cultural, you know, wanting that apparent unity. Eventually they changed the policy, understanding that, you know, that wasn't necessary to still, you know, pursue unity and have that sense of unified leadership. But that was a cultural aspect to the church polity.
Uh, This is something I've been dying to ask both of you, but what would your word of encouragement be for anyone who's thinking about doing something like this at their church?
Well, I'll say, even in the 4.5 years that I've been here, we've dealt with challenges. We've had conversations within our leadership in EACF, and then conversations across the aisle with the Chinese congregation and their leadership about different needs, about children's ministry, about youth ministry. The idea of church planting, still comes up from time to time. But when we've prayed about, what we're supposed to do when we encounter these challenges and these differences, our leadership has consistently felt God telling us, you just haven't tried hard enough, And that's interesting, because sometimes that's not what we want to hear. there are times when it feels easier just to separate, And I think about some of the other models. I've had conversations with brothers and sisters, mostly through email, at Chinese churches up in the Northeast, in Texas, Midwest, out in California. And some of these issues are common to all of us. And sometimes it does feel like it might be easier just to separate, but when the Holy Spirit's telling us that, no, there's something that I want to do here, there's something that is valuable here for these two congregations to continue to pursue, I believe it, I do believe it. And I'm thankful. There are a couple of churches, like there's a Korean church I know in the Mid-Atlantic region, where they've, they're really committed to this, to really pursue this and to invest in that. It does create those limitations because, they are a Korean church then. But there is something that is really beautiful in that. So I think that's just that word of encouragement that I would say, is that it does reflect something that we all hope for, which is that there may be differences, but when we're idealizing interdependence, then by the grace of God and by his wisdom and his administration, it is possible. It is possible for this model to work and to flourish in the ways in which God wants it to flourish.
Yeah, that's so good. My word of encouragement for any leader who's in this model thinking about this is just kind of like know yourself. Yeah, like self-assessment, self-awareness. What are your desires? What's your vision and what's your wiring? And so I really do believe there are some deep differences between a church planter and a church revitalizer. Somebody who wants to kind of imagine and create something from scratch versus people who are willing to do the hard work of, or different work. Planting's hard. I could never plant. The distinct work of revitalizing, of mediating, of bringing renewal to a church with a long history. When I came to my church, I realized that so many of our members have been through so many different, youth pastors, college pastors, English ministry pastors, and I just knew that I needed to really build their trust. And I couldn't just come in expecting everyone to do what I say because I'm the expert and I'm the executive pastor or whatever it might be. Because for a lot of them who have been hurt and experienced a lot of loss and transition in their church experience, their thought might be, hey, I was here before you came and I'll be here after you leave, And so, who are you? And so I just really knew that I needed to come in and mend a lot of hearts and build. And in a weird way, I think really highly of our church, but I think in terms of like our second generation and the English ministry that we walked into, there just was very low morale and low kind of like church esteem. They're like, oh yeah, all these other churches, the independent churches, the big majority culture churches, they have it all together. We are just like the room for rent under the shell of the big Korean church. And we're not that much, they felt very kind of insignificant in that sense. And so I just really wanted them to you know, see that God was with us working in our church, and that we could become a church where, yeah, you'd love to get your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers to come and worship with us here. And so over the years, God's really built that up. And yeah, a lot of people love our church and are very proud of the work that God has done and invited us into in this ministry model. And so that's meant a lot.
Well, gentlemen, it has been really edifying for me to just sit under both of you right now. I can tell both of you are seasoned ministry practitioners who love the church and love your congregations. And so grateful to sit with you. God is not done with the Asian American church model yet. We're seeing how God is working. I'm excited to see what God's going to do next. Thanks, guys, for this conversation. May God bless both your ministries.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.